This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And we are your humble hosts for today, a topic about something I eat every day.
Every day?
Yes, literally every day.
Oh man, I try to eat it every day. Sometimes I fail at that because I just don't purchase enough and I've never made it before. We're going to be talking about yogurt.
Yay!
Yay! Yogurt!
Aren't you excited?
I'm actually very excited. This involves like bacteria and so much amazing culture. I'm only going to tell that joke like 7 times and be that entertained by it throughout the course of this.
So, what is yogurt? According to Webster's Dictionary, it is, quote, a fermented, slightly acid, often flavored, semi-solid food made of milk and milk solids to which cultures of two bacteria, Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus, have been added.
Ah, yes. That's semi-solid food.
That's the sexiest part. I know. And that Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus part probably came from the FDA's 1981 defining of fresh prepared U.S. yogurt as having to contain both those things.
Technical definition. Let's break that down just a little bit. What are we actually talking about here? Probably you've interacted with yogurt before. Humans.
Yeah, I would guess.
But
I mean,
it's pretty common.
Yeah, especially these days.
Yeah.
So technical definition aside, basically, when fresh milk combines with friendly bacteria, which is also known as a yogurt starter culture, the milk thickens and becomes sour, which is that like tang that you taste in yogurt.
Yeah.
The bacteria eat the sugars in milk, the lactose, and excrete lactic acid, which does the thickening, souring.
More on that in a moment.
Yep. And acts as a preservative because it stunts or even prevents the growth of other less friendly bacteria. Depending on the temperature of where the yogurt is produced, the resulting culture will feature different types of bacteria. And thermophilic bacteria, they culture around 110 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 43 degrees Celsius. And they're more common in warmer areas because of that, while mesophilic bacteria culture at room temperature about 70 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit or 21 to 25 degrees Celsius.
But according to the FDA definition, mesophilic bacteria cultures cannot be labeled and sold as yogurt in the United States, I'm sure for some kind of safety reasoning.
I would guess.
Or they just don't like them.
Yeah, maybe.
These days, most commercial yogurt is made from cow's milk, but it can be and is made from pretty much any domesticated milk-producing animal, sheep, goats, yaks, horses, buffalo, etc. Plus, of course, non-animal milks like soy, rice, coconut, and nut milk.
Side note, when I was researching an episode for Ice Cream a couple years ago, London featured a Lady Gaga. It was called Lady Gaga, but she had nothing to do with it. Ice cream flavor. And the milk was human breast milk.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I didn't see any examples of human breast milk yogurt, but I'm pretty positive
it's probably a thing. I'm sure it's happened at some point. It's a wide world.
Have you ever had any of these? Like goat?
I've definitely had sheep and goat yogurt. Mm-hmm. And I think coconut, rice, soy, and almond milk yogurts.
So you're pretty well traveled when it comes to yogurt.
I see a yogurt and I'm like, man, if I'm gonna eat it, I might as well try something.
Yeah.
You can't just live on Chobani all day every day.
Good to be adventurous for sure.
Have you? I mean, I love the kind of like funky flavor of sheep and goat milk.
I know I've had like soy yogurt and coconut yogurt, but I don't know that I've had any other animal besides cow yogurt.
Oh, it's so tasty. We should, okay, this calls for a taste test.
Yes, it does. I'm always down for a taste test.
but so where does the word yogurt come from to begin with?
The first known use of it dates back to Turkey in 1625. And it was most likely derived from the Turkish verb, oh gosh, here we go, yogramak.
That's sure. That sounds, I don't know Turkish, so.
This yogramak. It meant to knead or, more appropriately in this case, to curdle, coagulate, or thicken.
Though yogurt has definitely been around a lot longer than, like, the 1600s, and more also on yogurt's history in a second.
Yeah. There are approximately 1,001 different ways to spell yogurt. I'm not going to try to pronounce them, even though I wrote them all down.
My favorite from this list, just looking at it, maybe this can be a video segment later on. Because, hey, guys, we also have a video show.
We do. Check it out. Uh-huh. It's awesome.
Is the one that looks in American English spelling like yogurt.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I love that one, too. That would be, maybe we should start pronouncing it that way.
Yogurt.
Yogurt. No one would think we were weird at all.
Yeah, absolutely not. No one thinks that about us anyway. I think we're safe.
No.
In addition to, of course, the kind of goopy, semi-solid yogurt that is perhaps or has been the most popular in American culture, there's been this influx of Greek yogurt.
Which is my preferred yogurt.
Me too.
Personal note. And the difference between Greek yogurt and regular yogurt is that Greek yogurt is more strained to get rid of the whey, and because of that, it's thicker and creamier. It has more protein than regular yogurt, and also a higher fat content, less sugar, and carbohydrates.
Which is why I enjoy it more. I mean, unless you've added sugar back in, of course.
That's true, yeah.
It's a thing that happens.
And Greek yogurt has skyrocketed in popularity over the past years. From a $60 million industry in 2005 to a $1.5 billion industry in 2011.
Wow.
And Chobani and Faya, they hold the largest part of this market, but Chobani is like way above Faya. It's like 50%, I think, of the Greek yogurt market corner.
While we're here, what about kefir? Because kefir is also a fermented milk product, but it's made with a combination of those mesophilic bacteria and also yeast in a slightly different method than yogurt. And traditionally, it's a wee bit alcoholic, but it doesn't have to be, and the stuff sold in stores today is not. And maybe we'll cover that in a whole other episode.
Yeah. I've never had kefir, and the price point has always been something that keeps me away, but I have friends who love it.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a roommate who had just gallons, not gallons, like, but just put like, but like a lot of the stuff around and like occasionally would be like kefir. And I'd be like, sure. And I'd be like, oh, why am I drinking yogurt? This is gross. I was always kind of unhappy about it. Just not for me. Kefir is not the only other like iteration of yogurt around the world.
There are so many iterations. The bigger ones that I know are labneh, dahi.
Where's dahi from?
It's from India.
Oh, okay.
And usually they put it, at least when I was in India, they had it as the side, like you would mix it with curries.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Like the kind of lighter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To kind of like
kind of cool it down.
Yeah.
There's also one that I kind of fell into a small rabbit hole of research about called Vili, which is a Finnish yogurt preparation that is ropey. Like
what?
Like natto, like the Japanese fermented soybean stuff. Like I don't know. Look up a video, y'all. It's the first time in a long time that I've said out loud at my desk, nope.
Well, now I'm really intrigued.
I know, right? We could make it at home.
Maybe we should.
Other things that I am so excited about is the science behind yogurt. Because curdled milk is so cool. Like seriously, you guys, milk is amazing. It's an emulsion, which is the science term for a mixture of things that do not usually mix, right? The things that don't usually mix in this case are water and fats, because under normal circumstances, fats and water repel each other. But milk also contains complex protein chains called caseins that are made up of both hydrophilic, that's water-loving, and lipophilic, that's fat-loving particles. And so when presented with both water and fats, caseins grab up bits of fat and cluster into globules called micelles, with the fat on the inside and the water-loving bits on the outside. And so those hydrophilic particles grab onto electrons in the water, meaning that each micelle winds up having a negative charge. And since negatively charged particles repel each other, the globules suspend themselves throughout the water in order to keep their distance. And that is what makes milk an emulsion, chemically speaking. In order to make milk into yogurt now, you've got to de-emulsify it a little bit to get to that sexy semi-solid state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those friendly lactic acid bacteria that we mentioned come in, because these critters love to eat lactose, which is the natural sugar that's in milk. They break it down during digestion, releasing lactic acid as a byproduct. And acids are they're sour tasting compounds, of course, that react with water. When they react with water, they release positively charged hydrogen ions, which is important because the acid reacts with the water in the milk, releasing a bunch of hydrogen ions, and these are positively charged particles that then latch onto the negatively charged micelles and neutralize them. With no force keeping the micelles apart, they clump together. In this case, the result of that is thick, spoonable, semi-solid, creamy yogurt. Chemistry! Bacteria poop! It's so cool! I love science!
Didn't know when you first clicked on this episode that it was going to get so science-y, but yogurt has got a lot of science around it.
Yogurt is full of science. It is also full of history.
Yes.
Because for millennia, fermenting milk into yogurt or into cheese was really the only way to preserve it. Probably the first, like, yogurt in scare quotes. yogurt was the result of prehistoric nomadic people storing their fresh milk in dried animal skins or dried animal stomachs. Perhaps going back to like the domestication of those animals circa 10,000 BCE. Like a long time ago.
Yeah.
And bacteria in the air or that had come into contact with the milk would do its work. And refilling the same container would keep that bacterial culture going.
Mm-hmm.
Records of fermented milk products go back to at least 6,000 BCE. There were a whole bunch of ancient Indian holistic healers that were so excited about the health benefits of the stuff. Other historic records of yogurt, around 100 BCE, there were some Greek texts that mentioned that barbarous nations ate yogurt. And probably they were just talking about Asian nomadic peoples who are thought to have brought yogurt with them into Central and Northern Europe, where it eventually became kefir and other more drink-like fermented milk products. It's mentioned in the Bible. In the book of Job, Abraham credits his longevity to yogurt.
Wow.
And some historians even say that the land of milk and honey is talking about yogurt.
Whoa.
I know. Who knew? I didn't know.
No, I didn't
Some historians apparently knew. Medieval Turks around the 11th century figured out that yogurt can be super great for battling digestive issues like diarrhea and cramps.
Mm-hmm.
That's because the lactic acid can kill some of the bad bacteria in your gut that are causing infections or preventing food from being digested properly. They also used it on sunburns.
Mm-hmm.
Putting dairy on sunburns seems like a real bad plan to me, personally. Supposedly, Genghis Khan fed his army yogurt to instill them with bravery, circa the 12th century. And yogurt was totally a staple of the Mongolian diet at the time, so, like, bravery aside, it's not unlikely that that was going on.
So next time I'm experiencing a little bit of nervousness, anxiety, perhaps I should reach for that cup of yogurt.
I, in fact, had yogurt right before I came into the studio.
You didn't test it out?
I guess not like with science, not like with a double blind study or anything like that. But but I'll see. Next time I won't eat yogurt right before.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
Because podcasting is terrifying, you guys.
It actually kind of is.
Like, I'm sitting in my chair like someone experienced turbulence on a plane right now.
she is people. It's true. it gets easier after the first 400 or 500 times that you do it.
Okay.
Can I share with you, perhaps to calm your nerves, this pretty amazing legend about King Francois I of France and yogurt?
Please do.
Okay. So definitely yogurt entered France and maybe Western Europe in general due to the French allegiance with the Turks, who prescribed yogurt to help treat diarrhea, as mentioned above. Uh-huh. But this legend goes that in 1542, Francois I was severely depressed, which they didn't call it back then, but his like listlessness and fits of nerves had his doctors totally flummoxed. Finally, the French ambassador to the Sublime Porte, which is a great name.
Sounds lovely.
I know, right? It's just a term for the central government of the Ottoman Empire at the time. But this dude suggested calling up a doctor in Constantinople who everyone in the empire was talking about, like including members of the Sultan's court.
Wow.
And this dude was famous for a medicine that he made from fermented sheep's milk. So the king calls up the doctor, you know, whatever the equivalent was, to come treat him. The doctor agrees, but he'll only travel on foot because he's got this prized flock of medicinal sheep. So the dude marches his flock of sheep from Constantinople, which of course is modern day Istanbul, which is on the southwestern edge of the Black Sea, some 1600 miles. That's like 2,600 kilometers across all of Southern Europe to Paris. According to Google Maps, this is a 546-hour trip, which is like 23 days of walking, assuming that you and your sheep never sleep.
Oh my gosh. And then the sheep like wandered off? I don't, okay.
They're very,
sheep-like.
Focused medicinal sheep. I don't know. He kept it together.
Okay.
Finally, the doctor arrives and the king, after eating this sheep's milk yogurt for several weeks, is cured. But the sheep are all sick. They never recover from this long walk and this change of locale, and every single one of them dies.
Oh no.
And the king really wants the doctor to stay, but the doctor is heartbroken and he refuses, possibly taking the secrets of his curative with him.
Who knows what we could have cured if those sheep hadn't died.
I know, right? Ugh. I mean, but like really probably the word about fermented milk got out around Western Europe at that time. I don't think it totally died like the sheep. Oh,
Lauren.
I love sheep. They're great. Actually, I don't know any sheep. I can't say
you personally don't know any sheep.
I do not.
You got a problem with sheep, Lauren?
I've met some goats.
Oh, okay.
Moving along down the timeline, into more modern times. In 1905, there was a Bulgarian medical student by the name of Stamen Grigorov, and he discovered one of the two bacteria that are crucial to yogurt, those Lactobacillus bulgaricus, which he then identified as just Bacillus bulgaricus. Those kind of name changes are pretty common. But yeah, around that time, there was really no commercial market for yogurt yet. It was either made at home or used as a medicine. It was actually sold in pharmacies and recommended by doctors, including, as Annie pointed out in our notes, the infamous Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, who was the inventor of cornflakes, the author and or practitioner of healthy living,
in heavy quotes,
medical advice, the coiner of the word sanitarium, and a genital mutilator.
Didn't see that one coming, did you?
He was terrible. Look him up sometime. He recommended fermented milk products like yogurt in both the diet and, quote, when rapid results are desired, by enema. Quoting again, thus planting the protective germs where they are most needed and may render the most effective service. He wrote that in 1917.
He was obsessed with like bowel health, among other terrible things, but he was really concerned. He thought it had something to do with morality. Like,
yeah. And definitely masturbation was part of the thing that it was. I don't know.
I mean, if you're looking for a disturbing/fascinating character to read about,
Oh, absolutely.
So the commercial market for yogurt finally opened up around 1919 when a Barcelonan and erstwhile Balkan resident by the name of Isaac Carasso founded Danone, which you may have heard of.
Probably.
And he pioneered an industrialized yogurt making process. His son, Daniel, who Danone was named after, actually, having moved to France and then fled from Nazi occupation to the United States, introduced fruit on the bottom yogurts to appeal to the American palate in 1947.
Mm-hmm. But there was yogurt being made in the U.S. before that.
Oh, absolutely.
In 1929, two Armenian immigrants by the names of Rose and Sarkis Kolombosian.
Sure.
They started Colombo and Sons Creamery on a small farm in Andover, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And they were so small that they made their Colombo yogurt over wood-fired stoves and delivered it using horse-drawn wagons.
Wow.
And it wasn't until the 1960s that their company started to take off, eventually being purchased by General Mills, who you've probably also heard of, and they were purchased in 1993 and still available for purchase until 2010 when they retired.
Oh.
And this brings us to the whole culture and marketing aspect of yogurt.
Culture!
Oh, we did it again!
Oh!
The reason Colombo yogurt took off in the 1960s had a lot to do with the fact that it was marketed, yogurt, that is, was marketed as a health food. And that's when that marketing tactic was really starting to kick in and people were starting to buy yogurt because they associated it with the health benefits.
But is it really a health food? Is it really healthy for you?
We'll answer that after a break from our sponsor.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So the number one health benefit you've probably heard is that the good bacteria in yogurt that we talked about earlier, at least in yogurt with that label that says live and active cultures. Lauren and I both just did quotes when I said that.
Yeah.
You probably know these as probiotics, and they purportedly help keep your digestive tract and all the tens of thousands of species of bacteria living in there happy and running smoothly. And they do that mainly by keeping the balance of good bacteria versus bad bacteria in check.
Right.
They promote better synthesis of vitamins, and they improve your stomach's ability to digest lactose.
Which is a problem, of course, that some people have.
Yes. Supposedly it helps out with this digestion of lactose to the point that people with lactose intolerance can usually eat dairy yogurt with no problem at all. And I have a lot of friends that tell me that, that normally they can't have any dairy, but yogurt is fine.
But yogurt's fine.
Yeah. On top of the digestive benefits, probiotics have been touted for bolstering your immune system, lowering your cholesterol. But before you get too excited, there's a lot of discussion in the food science community right now about probiotics and just how beneficial they actually are.
Which is a very upsetting discussion to me personally, because starting in college, I had all of these doctors telling me like, yeah, take more probiotics, like eat more yogurt. And I mean, yogurt's delicious. Like I like it. So I'm happy to do that part. But I'm like, how much, if probiotics aren't really helping you, man, how much money have I spent on probiotics over the years? Probably a lot. But yeah, it's such a big discussion right now.
Yeah. In a Fresh Air interview with author of I Contain Multitudes, Ed Wong, he said that the science behind these claims is lacking because there aren't enough probiotics in yogurt to really do anything substantial. Mm. With the notable exceptions of when your gut bacteria population is way out of whack. Like for people suffering from antibiotic-caused diarrhea or yeast infections.
Okay.
Specifically for things caused by antibiotics.
Oh, okay.
So, in other words, it's helpful if you've got a problem, but otherwise it just sort of passes right through your system without doing much.
Hmm.
So you know that saying, gut feeling?
Yeah.
Recent studies are checking to see if this might be a more literal thing than we thought. By examining the connection between your brain chemistry and the microbe population in your gut, scientists postulate the most likely candidate for this brain-gut connection is the vagus nerve, a pathway between our stomachs and brains that is stimulated by our gut bacteria to produce emotion and thought-influencing neurotransmitters.
Huh.
It sounds pretty creepy.
Yeah.
When you say it that way.
This has suddenly verged into like Cronenbergian body horror, but I love it.
I love to think of just this whole colony of bacteria warring it out in my gut. I'm like, no, we want her to feel mad. No, she's going to be sad. And then there's the chill one that's like, dude, let's just get along and let her be happy.
I hope that the chill one is winning more often than not.
Well, I do eat a lot of yogurt, so
yeah,
should be.
So what's some of the research to kind of back this up?
There is so much research. A 2011 study of mice displaying autistic-like antisocial symptoms were given probiotics, and the probiotics reversed some of their anxiety, distress, And they actually did use some human volunteers in this study.
Oh, cool.
And the human volunteers who took the same probiotic for 30 days also reported experiencing lower levels of anxiety and depression.
Oh, wow.
It was a small sample size, though, but it's something that they wanted to replicate in a larger study. And then in 2013, Caltech did a study to examine why autism often comes hand in hand with GI disorders.
Oh.
By inducing autism in baby mice, all of these mice exhibited gastrointestinal problems along
wow.
with the autism.
Oh my goodness.
They most commonly displayed intestinal permeability.
Intestinal permeability.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound fun.
No.
And when the mice were given probiotics, the permeability, which is also called leaky gut, corrected itself.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't sound fun. But no. but cool.
Yeah.
Score
in all
one,
of the mice, it corrected itself.
Score one for probiotics.
Mm-hmm. And the mice became more social and less anxious. Obviously, there are a lot of pieces to this and to the causes and treatment of autism. We still don't really know how much genetics versus environment versus now, possibly.
Yeah, yeah they've just found actually a series of genetic mutations in the brain mm-hmm. that they're pretty sure are exactly what's responsible for autism, but mm-hmm. they still don't know why those mutations happen. So it's like, well, further research.
Yes, always.
Yeah.
And a lot of this could also vary from person to person, but this was the first study showing gut bacteria could potentially be the underlying cause of some of the symptoms of autism that are currently thought to be the brain's doing.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is super fascinating.
Yeah.
And then there was another study
uh-huh.
in 2013 from UCLA this time, and they divided 36 healthy women into three groups. One eating yogurt with probiotics. One eating a yogurt taste-alike product without probiotics. And a third eating no product at all twice a day for 4 weeks.
Okay.
Unless you weren't eating anything, then.
Then you, yeah.
Before and after fMRI scans of the women's brains, both at rest and emotionally stimulated, showed that the brains of the women who had consumed the yogurt with probiotics were basically more chill during the emotional exercise.
Huh.
And even the way they processed emotion in their resting state was different. It relied more on reasoning and less on the emotional side of the brain.
Yeah. And that is a small sample
yes.
size, of course.
Yes.
But
it had interesting implications, and it's something that they want to also test on a larger scale. Personally, I have recently seen a headline, "Are women too stressed to poop?" So the impact emotion has on digestion or vice versa, just this connection seems to be a popular topic of discussion right now.
Yeah, there's so much research into it that mm-hmm. I keep seeing. And we should actually, our coworker, Julie Douglas, is completely obsessed with like poop and emotional gut bacteria connections and all of that. So she wouldn't mind me saying that. It's the truth. We should definitely have her, come on the show. She's, if you want to hear from the lady who's obsessed with poop, there's a really great show that she does for How Stuff Works called, The Stuff of Life.
Yeah.
Which is an audio podcast. If you're into those.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hope so.
Yeah. Okay. But other than potentially, other than all of this probiotic stuff,
mm-hmm.
what else does yogurt have going for it?
The second thing you've probably heard is that it might help prevent osteoporosis, especially for older people due to the level of bone hardening calcium
yeah.
and protein present in most dairy products. And yogurt does have a lot of protein, about 8.5 grams in a cup for a plain whole milk variety. Side note, I never put together until I was doing this research that whey powder protein and the whey in yogurt are related.
Oh.
How have I gotten this far in life? And I'm someone who, I lift some weights, you guys. I've taken some protein powder in my day and
You lift, bro?
I lift, bro.
Yeah. I have like 3 pound hand weights that I bop around with sometimes.
Hey, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Everyone's
got to start somewhere, Lauren.
Aw, thank you. Thank you for
You're
the pep
welcome.
Talk, Annie.
And other health stuff attributed to yogurt includes lowering your blood pressure. And that's not, exclusive to yogurt. Most dairy products are thought to do that. And the fact that it keeps you pretty full for pretty long with a relatively low calorie count. And that's one of the reasons it's become regarded as a weight loss food.
Okay. I mean, makes sense to me. That's why, I mean, without the science to back it up, that's why I eat it. Because I, you know, I mean, A, it's tasty, and B, I am less likely to stab out the eyeballs of my coworkers and eat them at meetings because I'm less hungry.
We live in fear of this.
I, as well, you should.
Oh, yeah. It's like an emergency Lauren snack thing. Oh, God. I think she's coming at someone with a fork again.
I'm honestly surprised that no one has ever, like, thrown a granola bar at my head.
There's still time. There-
Okay. New goals.
So all of this to say, when it comes to the question of is yogurt healthy, the short answer seems to be yes, but not as healthy as marketing would have you believe.
Oh, but marketing of yogurt.
Yes.
This is, I mean, I like y'all have seen yogurt commercials.
They're
terrible.
They're terrible.
Up until very recently, they were basically all marketed towards women. Mm-hmm. Or aimed at women rather. And what, why? And has it always been this way? And why?
No, it has not always been this way, Lauren.
Okay.
This kind of goes back to the history part we were talking earlier in the age-old question of how did yogurt, and in particular Greek yogurt, go from something most Americans thought was too sour to the state snack of New York as of 2014.
I did not know that.
Oh, it's one of my favorite Daily Show clips of all time when Jon Stewart is eviscerating the New York State Senate for their they argued about it.
Oh my goodness.
About whether or not yogurt should be the state snack and whether or not a pretzel covered in yogurt would count.
I didn't know that there were state snacks. Like state birds? Sure.
Yeah. Back to the history of marketing in the United States of yogurt.
Yeah.
Like we said earlier, yogurt was around but not too prevalent or popular at all in the U.S. But it was around in the 1920s. Enter Stephen A. Gaymont, a Hungarian bacteriologist and founder of Gaymont Laboratories, Inc., which produced the culture that allowed 500 companies to make a product, quote, like sour cream, but at a sixth of the calories. Why didn't people want that?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Gaymont came to the U.S. in the 1940s at the invite of President Truman's vice president, Henry A. Wallace, and Gaymont set up a lab to find a way to make yogurt more appealing to the masses, eventually inventing a prototype for frozen yogurt and marketing yogurt with fruit added, not at the bottom of the cup, added, as a way to lure wary Americans into buying this too sour product. But wary Americans would not be lured.
Ah!
Nope. Weren't having it.
Well, not until.
Not until the meat shortages of World War II and Juan Metzger, who was the partner of Daniel Carasso, who we talked about earlier, and the president of Danon at the time, tried a different angle, telling Americans that yogurt was a suitable meat substitute thanks to all that protein in it.
Did it work?
Nope. So he returned to Gaymont's method of appealing to America's notorious sweet tooth, and that's how Danon's fruit on the bottom of the cup thing came about.
Ah.
Yeah. And thanks to the added sweetness of the fruit, Americans finally were willing to eat some yogurt on a larger scale. And Danon is the company that pioneered the marketing of yogurt as a health food, touting the low fat and low sugar. Sweet and healthy.
Best of both worlds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Danon's marketing of yogurt as a health food was so effective that Mr. Metzger was named Marketer of the Decade in the 1970s by Marketing Communications.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. And the success of Danon's health food shtick inspired competitors to do the same. An advertisement for Yami yogurt in a 1951 issue of Life magazine named Yogurt the Secret of Youth.
Oh.
Yes. That Secret of Youth thing got taken to a whole nother level in 1977 when Danon debuted their Georgians Over 100 ad.
And this is like the third time, this is like the third take of us trying to get through that sentence because Annie was laughing too hard to herself about this ad, which I haven't watched it.
Oh, you haven't watched, oh no. You've got to watch it,
okay.
You guys. Finish the episode and then go find this ad because it is so strange.
Okay, run us through it.
Let me set the scene.
Okay.
Okay, the shot opens on some older folks who are hoeing some fields.
Okay.
And the narrator, in a very, like, calm, kind of clinical voice, is telling you that in Soviet Georgia, there's two curious things. They eat a lot of yogurt, and a lot of them live past 100. Now, I'm not going to say that those two things are necessarily related, but yeah, they probably are. And eating and eating yogurt will make your mom happy, too.
Oh!
Yeah, that's how the commercial ends.
Okay, so living to 100 and making your mom happy.
Who is older than you.
Who is older than you. Yeah.
Still alive.
Okay.
Super happy you're eating yogurt.
Yeah.
The narrator's like, and Volgrod had 2 cups of yogurt, which made his mom very happy.
Oh. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. So is this, I mean, was there any truth to this, though? I mean,
unclear. In a 1998 New York Times article, the reporter went to investigate if anyone in Georgia actually ate the stuff, and they all said they didn't.
However, way back in 1909, Ilya Mechnikov, who was a Russian Nobel laureate working at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, was suggesting that the cultures in yogurt were responsible for the Bulgarian peasant population's longevity. And so maybe this was a strange case of crossed wires. Maybe, like, how did they pick Soviet Georgia is my question.
I think I remember reading it was the first thing that filmed there during Soviet times.
Wow. Regardless of how silly it was, all of this marketing was a pretty huge success.
It was very effective. By 1982, sales of yogurt are at an annual 19% growth rate. But this did include a lot of things like froyo and extra sugary gelatin-laden stuff that the food industry folk were starting to disagree over whether or not that actually counted as yogurt.
Ah.
Yes. And I had to include that this is the same year Go-Gurt got its start.
Go-Gurt. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was that early. I thought it was like when I was a kid, like a decade later.
It was. That's when it like became commercial and was in all the kids, the ads
lunch
with kids
boxes,
like
yeah.
skating around.
yeah, skateboards and rollerblades yeah. and Go-Gurt.
But this was the year the prototype, I think it was like a professor at a college, was like, hey, I wonder if I put yogurt in this too.
Yeah, for those of you who did not grow up watching commercials with real rad kids riding skateboards and eating Go-Gurt and you have no idea what we're talking about, Go-Gurt is a okay, so you know those, it's just like a little plastic tube, like those freezy ice,
yeah.
icy stick.
Yep.
It's a tube a little bit like that, and it's just filled with yogurt, like mm-hmm. really grossly oversweetened yogurt. In like grape flavor or something like that.
Yeah.
Go-Gurt aside though.
Yes. Danone was still leading the way when it came to marketing. And they came up with a new slogan in 1992. Quote, you can't change the world, but you can change the way you live.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Very sage words. And to reinforce this ideal, Danone introduced sprinkle packs. Same year. Change the way you live, Lauren.
Put some sprinkles in your yogurt.
Mm-hmm. This still hasn't gotten us to the main question that we started this whole segment with.
Oh, right. The question of women.
Yeah.
Of why women seem to be the main target of this type of advertising.
And this kind of has to do with just, in general, women tended to buy more health-conscious foods, which, thanks to the marketing efforts, included yogurt.
Okay.
And marketers took note that women bought more. And they thought, all right, well, let's just try to pivot more towards women.
It's working, so let's go for it.
Yeah, and they also, as with a lot of products, women usually did the grocery shopping. So a lot of marketers did kind of aim their ads towards women.
Sure.
In this pivot yogurt made towards women, they started marketing less as like a health food and more as a weight loss food. Since one of the worst things a woman could ever be is fat.
Of course. That's absolutely the very, very worst.
I know.
As we all are aware.
That's what my TV tells me.
Yeah, every day.
Yeah. You guys have probably seen these commercials where it's like, you want that piece of Boston cream pie, but not the extra pounds? Grab Yoplait's Boston cream pie flavored yogurt. You'll never know the difference.
It's
I know. It's better than sex.
Yeah.
Better than a massage.
Yeah.
Better than chocolate. My God, even better than shoes.
How can anything be better than shoes?
It can't be.
We're being very sarcastic right now. I hope
it's
coming
very clear.
This is all so sexist and horrifying.
Another famous ad that I remember seeing was...
I remember this one too.
Yeah, it was a woman. She's like staring into the refrigerator at this piece of raspberry cheesecake. And she's thinking in her head, like, how much exercise am I going to have to do? How many calories am I going to have to burn off? I want to eat this piece of cheesecake and nullify it. And then one of her colleagues comes up and is like, I've been thinking about that cheesecake all day. And she reaches into the refrigerator and surprise reveal, it's raspberry cheesecake flavored yogurt.
With only 100 calories.
Yeah. The woman who's thinking about eating the actual real dessert, heaven forbid, is like, oh, you've lost weight. So a recurring theme in all of these commercials is that yogurt will keep you skinny and able to overcome your cravings for evil fatty desserts. And so it is your power. It is your savior.
This is, oh, it's just such a gendered mess.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the biggest offenders for this was Activia. And this is a product that is owned by Danone.
It's like main draw is that it regulates your poop.
Yeah.
You poop better with Activia.
Yes. It regulates the keyword. They trademarked their own, I guess, culture, probiotic culture. Bifidus regularis.
Ah.
That kind of sounds like a spell.
Right?
They were around in Europe for several years before they launched in the United States in 2006. They hired an opinion research company that surveyed 20,000 people in the search for America's, quote, most irregular cities. And they did this with, like, horrible... Did you read, like...
No.
They'd say the traffic's really backed up in Orlando. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And irregular was defined here as, quote, that miserable experience of not going to the bathroom for two or more days.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And they extrapolated their results, saying that 26 million Americans have been irregular at least once in the last 2 months. And GI problems do appear to impact women more than men, or at the very least, women more often are diagnosed, which could also go back to the fact that women are more likely to go to the doctor.
Yeah. Going back to terrible sexism, as mentioned above.
Yes. But all that aside, because of that, Activia / Danone focused all of their marketing prowess and money on women.
For this Activia campaign.
Yes. And you guys have probably seen or heard of that Jamie Lee Curtis ad campaign where she's talking about how it helps keep her regular and she's rubbing her belly and all happy. That was a $100 million campaign.
Oh, my goodness.
Kind of related tangent-ish. There's a whole tangled mess of body control, body image, stress, and feminine beauty standards. Yeah, I said it. Surrounding this and the culture of constipation dating all the way back to the 19th century and a procedure called the Lane colectomy, a surgery performed mostly on women by Sir Arthanaut Lane. What a great name.
Yeah.
He claimed that a lacking of health in the digestive arena made a woman ugly and therefore unmarriageable.
Unmarriageable?
Oh my God.
That's even worse than being fat.
It didn't work, surprise, and it was harmful also.
Oh.
All right.
Well, okay. Back from this depressing
yes.
tangent.
Tangent over.
Yeah. Back to Activia.
They had a very successful opening year in the U.S., raking in $130 million in sales, and sales doubled the next year, which
wow.
is very rare for a company in, like, their first year. But if you listen closely to their commercials, they never actually say anything about preventing constipation. They just really heavily imply it.
How?
With that rubbing the stomach thing.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a famous ad where a woman, her bare stomach is exposed, and on top of it is a yellow arrow pointing downward, which is implying, like, it's going to clean you out.
Yeah.
Or at least that's how I would read it.
Sure.
And they specifically did not say constipation because the FDA labels constipation as a disease. And when a product claims to treat a disease, there's a whole FDA rigmarole of getting that claim approved. Well, they didn't want to do that. And this was another red flag about what these ads were implying, because probiotics are generally used to treat diarrhea, not constipation.
Right.
But Activia got around this by saying on their website that it helped with IBS.
Intestinal
bowel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Which could cause constipation and or diarrhea.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Several studies pretty recently into Activia's health claims found that there was little to no science to back up what they were saying, implying, or that some of their ads were outright false. Activia eventually had to reach a $21 million settlement with the FTC in 2010 for their misleading Jamie Lee Curtis ads. And now they can't advertise any health benefits unless they also mention that you have to eat 3 servings a day to get them, which is a lot of yogurt.
Yeah. That's way more yogurt than I personally care to consume.
Yeah, that's way too much.
Yeah.
Activia didn't seem too hurt by this, though. And the same year, the settlement, they made $505 million.
So that $21 million is a drop in the bucket, really, yeah, when you get down to it.
Mm-hmm. More recently, you've probably seen yogurt ads featuring hunky men like John Stamos and women deciding they'd rather have sex with the yogurt. Speaking of John Stamos, let's not forget yogurt's recent foray into masculine-gendered yogurt with products like Brogurt.
Brogurt!
Introduced in 2013. More protein for all your muscle-building needs and in tough black containers.
Yeah, because you can't eat yogurt out of a white container because it makes you less masculine.
What we're really saying here, y'all, is that sexism hurts men, too.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Sexism aside. other key marketing things.
Saya established its American subsidiary in 2004. It started to be sold in the U.S. before that, around 1988, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. And a factory in upstate New York was established in 2008. A year before that, in 2007, they had an ad along the Macy's Day Parade route. That same year, Chobani bought a factory big enough for mass distribution from Kraft, also in upstate New York, right next door to Faya. And speaking of Chobani, during the 2014 Winter Olympic Games in Sochi, Russia blocked a shipment of 5,000 cups of yogurt meant for American athletes due to, quote, improper paperwork.
Oh.
It ended up getting donated to food banks in the area. The Olympians never got it.
Oh, poor Olympians. I mean, but yay for the food banks.
Yeah.
That must have been a really nice surprise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, we cannot talk about yogurt without mentioning at least a tiny bit frozen yogurt.
Well, like we said earlier, it was invented in the 1940s-ish, but one of the big moments of note was when Pinkberry opened its L.A. store in 2005. A lot of fanfare, a lot of excitement, kind of the start of Froyo's wonderful, like, 10 years.
Bizarre decade. Yeah. At the forefront of the American consciousness.
Mm-hmm. But by 2014, papers like the Washington Post reported on the decline of Froyo, running headlines like, with cupcakes in decline, is frozen yogurt the next to fall?
That's beautiful. I'm picturing like a risk board, but with like cupcakes in one corner and Froyo in another. We should definitely do a whole episode on frozen yogurt, because I think that
I do love frozen yogurt. I hardly ever get it, but when I do, it's a nice special day.
It is. I'm always so flummoxed when I'm standing by all of those spigots, though, because it's just like I'm hypothetically here to eat a dessert, but so much of my brain just balks at the idea of putting like chocolate sauce on yogurt.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, A, it's not going to taste that good. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just eat a chocolate bar.
Yeah.
And B, like, why am I doing this to yogurt, which has done nothing to me?
Yeah.
It's so kind to me. Why am I putting sprinkles on it?
Because you can't change the world, but you can change the way you live. Remember? So if you're turned off by all of this marketing and you're thinking, maybe I want to make my own yogurt, just wait until after this short break and we'll let you know how to do that.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, then look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast in the United States and number 15 on business in the United States. And it has amazing guests such as Alex Hormozi, Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez. We pull in these amazing interviews with other people that are not only great marketers, but actual operators. And the icing on the cake is Neil and myself were also operators as well. So we share learnings from the trenches. We share secrets that we otherwise wouldn't be sharing with other people. And we also share other advantages that will help you get ahead of your competition. So all you have to do is listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Let's say you are an Olympian facing a yogurt shortage, or maybe just an average person looking to save some yogurt money. How would you go about making your own yogurt?
You can make your own yogurt.
I believe you can. I've never done it.
Me neither.
But.
The experts say that there's a couple of ways.
For the easiest method, you're going to need some milk, preferably whole or 2%, and some plain Greek or regular yogurt. Just make sure there are the live cultures listed in the ingredients, like we said earlier. And the more the better.
Specifically for yogurt making, I read that it's better to get one of the like large global brands instead of one of the smaller specialty kind of brands, because those larger brands contain more like predictable, dependable cultures. And so it just might not culture properly if you use one of the one-off cups.
Mm-hmm. You're also going to want to make sure all your equipment is nice and sterile, because you don't want any other weird germs, bacteria messing up your culture.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need a heavy pot and the lid. A lot of people said they use Dutch ovens.
Okay.
Once you've got your equipment, first you're going to want to heat the milk to about 200 degrees Fahrenheit or 93 degrees Celsius. Stirring gently because you don't want it to scorch. And this temperature changes the protein structures of the milk, which we talked about earlier.
Right.
And then you're going to want to cool it till it's just warm enough to touch, about 115 degrees Fahrenheit or 46 degrees Celsius. And you're going to keep stirring it because you don't want a skin to form over the top.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then you're going to add about a cup of milk to thin out the yogurt, and you're going to whisk to combine. Mm-hmm. Lauren and I are both, like, gesturing through this.
It's helping.
Yeah. I'm visualizing it as I say it. Then you're going to put the pot covered in a turned-off oven with a light turned on or some other insulated warm place.
Okay.
You wait for it to set, which is about 4 hours or overnight. The longer you wait, more tartness you'll get out of the flavor, and also the thicker the yogurt.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Letting the bacteria do their thing, getting more lactic acid in there.
That does make sense.
Sure.
And when the yogurt has set to your liking, remove it from the oven or wherever it is you stashed it and let it cool. You can either pour off the whey or you can whisk it in. Even if you pour off the whey, whisk it for good measure.
Okay. And you can keep that whey. If you do pour it off, you can keep it and use it for baking purposes. You can use it as a substitute in like your bread or quick bread recipes. Or you could add it to a smoothie.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes perfect
sense. It's nutritious and delicious. Tastes just like whey. So you've whisked the yogurt.
Yes. And then you can transfer it to containers and refrigerate it for up to 2 weeks. And after this, you can make more homemade yogurt using your own homemade yogurt.
What?
Whoa.
Crazy. That starter culture, y'all.
Yeah. If you happen to have a dehydrator or a yogurt maker, you can use those to do this. Mm-hmm. I have seen some recipes where people, instead of putting it in a Dutch oven, they put the yogurt in individual mason jars.
Oh, that sounds slightly unnecessarily complicated, but I guess you save time on the back end of packaging.
Variations of this, you can add gelatin or milk powder for thickness and whatever flavors you'd like. And vanilla is one of the most popular options. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can also add a jam or something in there if you want that fruit on the bottom kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to make your own Greek yogurt, you strain it to the thickness you like using a cheesecloth, a strainer, and a bowl.
Yeah, you take the cheesecloth or like a clean cotton or something, put the yogurt in there, hang it over a bowl.
Yeah, this sounds like...
Let it drain out.
Very simple. I thought there was going to be a lot more steps and a lot more waiting when I originally in my head was envisioning, how do you make yogurt?
Like, it's clearly got to be so complicated.
Yeah.
But it's really just waiting for bacteria to poop.
Ooh, when you put it that way. I definitely want to try this.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other most commonly used method is almost exactly the same, except instead of using store-bought or homemade yogurt, you use a powdered yogurt starter, and you follow the directions on the package. But after that, it's pretty much the same. Difficulty level is only higher in procuring this kind of obscure ingredient.
I hear that it exists or that you can purchase it online.
Yes.
Certainly. And by the way, if you want to make yogurt from soy or rice or coconut or nut milks, you'll probably want to use powdered cultures. I guess you could try with like store-bought live culture, whatever type of yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's reportedly more temperamental than dairy milk yogurt. So using those packaged powdered cultures might be the easiest way to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would you want to do this other than like you're curious and you want to have a large amount of dairy product sitting in your oven overnight? It's not difficult, really. Right. And advocates report that it's both tastier and thicker than store-bought yogurt is. Furthermore, if you eat it often, you'll be reducing the number of plastic containers that are in circulation, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the cost. There's a really great cookbook or cook guide called Make the Bread by the Butter that Annie introduced me to. It's by Jennifer Reese.
No relation.
No relation. She reports in the book that the cost difference is pretty significant as well. As of 2011 prices, a quart of store-bought yogurt cost anywhere from like $3.15 to $8 for the like cheapest generic brands to the really schmancy Greek style name brands, whereas homemade yogurt costs $1.75 for a quart.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's pretty substantial.
But other than just eating it, hey, what else can you use yogurt for?
You can use yogurt for a pretty wide variety of things, especially in the realm of substitution.
Mm-hmm.
You can substitute oil. I use it when I make like fruit breads, like pumpkin bread.
Yeah.
You can substitute your sour cream.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to fool myself into like blue cheese kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure.
mayo and like chicken or potato or tuna salads.
Mm-hmm. Or for cream in soups or stews or mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also smoothies.
Yes. I use smoothies a lot. Mm-hmm. Homemade fruit yo.
Or even as a dessert topping, mm-hmm. which is like kind of a substitution for whipped cream, I guess. But it's really its own lovely thing. It's great on like shortcakes and bundt cakes, anything kind of like heavy and sweet. And really seriously, like one of my favorite things is pound cake with supremed grapefruit or blood orange sections and a dollop of plain yogurt and a fresh crack of black pepper over the top.
That sounds delicious.
It's so good. And thanks to my friend Daryl Autry for that one.
Thanks, Daryl.
It's really good. Let's go get a pound cake.
I'm so down. Before we wrap up completely, it's time to read some listener mail because we have been hearing from some of you. It's been lovely.
Yes.
Keep emailing. This one is from a history PhD from the UK named Stephanie.
Yeah. She wrote in to say, I admit I tend not to drink a lot of champagne, both due to cost and preference. I'm a big fan of Prosecco, though. It's made with the much cheaper tank method and ends up more bubbly than champagne. It's also easy to get good Prosecco affordably. Aside from Lauren, Prosecco is also totally what I drink at home. Most Prosecco and Cava for very, very much those reasons.
Verified by Annie.
Yeah. Back to Stephanie. The big thing I remembered was going to a wine tasting and being told that the best thing to have with champagne is fish and chips. Something about the bubbles cutting through greasiness and being just acidic enough to be extra nice.
Aside from Annie, that sounds delicious.
Right?
Oh.
Okay, back to Stephanie. As for cauliflower with Velveeta, I'm sure it's the Americanized cauliflower cheese that seems to be a big thing in the UK. It's basically macaroni and cheese, but with cauliflower rather than noodles. It's really common as a ready meal here and generally cheap, though with actual cheddar cheese. In fact, cauliflower is generally so cheap here. Earlier today, I saw a head for 80 pence or about a dollar that the idea of it being expensive was baffling. End quote. And then Stephanie followed up with a link to a report on this winter's cauliflower crop from the UK from ITV News. And apparently the market for cauliflower there is so overwhelmed by international imports that East Kent farmers have had to plow huge amounts of their crops back into the soil this year. Price markets on perishables are so fascinating.
Yeah.
And also, that's so sad.
I know. That makes me very sad.
I'm like, oh, Annie is making extremely sad face right now.
Oh, poor cauliflower. yeah, thanks so much for writing in, Stephanie. That was really interesting.
While we're thanking people, I wanted to throw a thank you to audio producer Dylan Fagan for recording this for us.
Dylan's waving at us.
He's waving at us. He's listening.
Aww. So nice.
Thanks to all of you for also listening to mm-hmm. this whole time. If you have any suggestions for other things that you would like to listen to us talk about, you can email us.
Yes, we have a fancy new email address. Mm-hmm. It is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com. Also, thanks to local Atlanta Greek yogurt maker, Atlanta Fresh.
Yeah, we were able to go talk to them about this small industrial production.
Yeah.
Thanks to all of them for being so generous.
Yeah, and there is a video component to this episode.
As we have mentioned, it should be available on Amazon Prime. If you Google us, you'll figure yeah. it out. Y'all are
figure
smart
it out,
people.
Internet people. You can figure it out.
You totally can. Again, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again real soon, and we hope that many more lovely things are coming your way.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.